side. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see not joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a can just see, open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
There we go, folks. It is Monday, January the 18th, 2021. We're listening to today's edition of The Ugly Truth. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope all of you of goodwill are doing well. And especially today, given the fact that just a little more than 48 hours from now, it is D-Day, and it is it's D-Day. It's just a question of whether or not it is going to be doom and destruction or whether or not it is going to be Donald, as in Donald J. Trump. Again, just some quick housekeeping notes, folks. We'll see what happens Wednesday, whether or not we will be back here discussing the day's events. I did start doing a program last night. But I just felt like, no, I'm just going to sit on this. I'm going to wait until tomorrow before we launch into the discussion that I wanted to have, because I want to make sure that I've got all of my ducks in a row, as they say. Because, as we've said many times on this program, folks, you know, there are a lot of people out there claiming various degrees of expertise when it comes to analyzing and rendering commentary on these very complex and oftentimes convoluted political events taking place these days, and I just don't want to be one of those types. I want to make sure that when I pull the trigger that I am hitting as close to the bullseye as possible. And, you know, not just for your benefit, but for mine as well, because we make decisions based upon conclusions, and I certainly would not want to be responsible for anyone making a bad decision that has been based upon a bad conclusion on my part. So I don't claim to be right on everything, folks. I don't consider to be infallible or incapable of error. But generally speaking, I think, even though I do not have all the answers, I think that the answers that I do have, that they are pretty close to correct, pretty close. So anyway, folks, here we are. It is, as I said, it is Monday. We are just about 48, well, we'll just say 50, just shy of 51 hours away from D-Day. And of course, that is Inauguration Day. And at this point, somebody looking at all of this in a very one-dimensional and superficial way would say to themselves, well, it looks like it's a done deal, that Donald Trump is going to be out and Joe Biden is going to be in. I'm still not one of those people, folks. In fact, the events that have taken place, the developments since we were last together, now I have ramped up my percentage number in favor of the notion that the president, the current president, Donald J. Trump, is going to be president after Wednesday. I'm willing at this point to notch it up a bit in support of that. At the very least, as I've said before, folks, while I will not pretend for a second to be able to authoritatively divine, predict what it is that the sitting president has in store, the one thing that I am willing to state without any reservation is that he's not going to sit by and do nothing. There's too much at stake, not the least of which is his wife and his children and his grandchildren. And they're already as they have been now for months, are talking about bringing criminal charges against him and against his children. And he knows, folks, he has lived in the belly of the beast for a long time, and I'm not talking about Washington, D.C. I'm talking about the real belly of the beast, which is New York City. And these people who are going after him, he has had to, he's had the unfortunate misfortune of having to deal with them in the business world for about 40 years or so. So he knows what they're like. He knows how vicious they are. He knows how dangerous they are. He knows what they can do because of their tentacled network and the influence that they have through corruption and everything else. And he knows that his children will be spending the rest of their lives with a death sentence hanging over them, whether it is in the form of being brought up on trumped up charges, no pun intended, against them and them spending a considerable amount of time in prison, or whether they will simply meet with an accident, as has happened to many people who have gotten on the bad side of Yahweh's chosen people. And for that reason alone, folks, I mean, if you want to just put aside the notion that President Trump is completely altruistic and he only cares about the well-being of the country, and you know, you just want to say, well, maybe he's just in it for himself. Well, fine. He's in it for himself. He's not going to risk being brought up on criminal charges that he could spend the rest of his life and a considerable amount of his fortune fighting. He's not going to sit by and allow his children to deal with that, and his grandchildren, and possibly his great-grandchildren. Because if it's one thing that we know about those of the Hebraic persuasion, they never forgive, and they never forget. It's always an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a life for a life. And the fact that the president dared to screw around with their plans and dared to frustrate what it is that they have got planned for the rest of the world, which is global war as the necessary precursor to the arrival of their Messiah, he's going to have to pay a price, and he's going to have to be made into an example in case anybody wants to follow in his footsteps. So at this point, folks, I still maintain as of this moment that the president has something very, very big planned. We're going to talk about what the possibilities, the probabilities of that, what those big plans are, on today's program. But, you know, folks, look at the math of this. There are 25,000 troops in Washington, D.C., tiny little Washington, D.C. That's 10 times the amount of troops that we have in Iraq right now, okay? A war zone. So what is it that all of those troops are there for? Is it just to make sure that everything moves smoothly? Well, I'd say that that is probably the case, folks, to make sure that there is a smooth transition of power, as the president has promised now on several occasions, but not necessarily the transition of power that a lot of people are expecting. And, well, anyway, folks, we will get into that in just a bit. But before that, we are going to listen to two sound bites, two very important sound bites. Probably all of you will remember this. This was just a few years ago. Actually, I think it was about 3 years ago. And it left the press scratching their heads and, you know, reacting the way that they have from the very beginning. With President Trump reacting in the way that they always have. Oh, he's crazy. He doesn't make any sense. He's senile. He's this, he's that. And that's not the case at all, folks. Anyway, these two sound bites, they are news reports that were put together in the aftermath of the president calling together the reporters at the White House and assembling all of his all of the military men, high-ranking military men. I tried to do a scan of the various people who were there in order to make sure that all branches of the military were there, but I wasn't able to definitively ascertain whether they were all there or not. It doesn't matter. It was a big group of military men and their wives. And anyway, we're just going to go ahead and listen to the words of the president himself.
Last night, a cryptic comment here from President Trump. Let me set the stage for you. This was after they'd given what's called a lid at the White House, which means they tell the reporters, no more news for tonight. Everybody can go home. After that, the White House summoned reporters who remained in the press briefing room and said, come on in. The president's having a dinner with military leaders. There was a five-piece Marine Corps band, a very formal and elegant affair. And apparently the president had decided he wanted to open that up to reporters, bring the cameras in. So the reporters scrambled into the room. And then the president made a comment here about what this military gathering at the White House might presage. Here's that moment last night, and we'll parse it on the other side.
Do you guys know what this represents?
Tell us, sir.
Maybe it's the calm before the storm.
What's the storm?
Could be the calm before the storm.
What storm, Mr. President?
You'll find out.
So the president there saying that the gathering with military leaders at the White House might represent the calm before the storm, asked what storm he's talking about. The president said, you'll find out. So not clear exactly what the president was referencing there, but this comes after a week in which the president sort of rebuked his own Secretary of State, saying that he was wasting his time trying to negotiate with North Korea. There could be something that the president's contemplating there, but there are so many flashpoints around the world these days, guys. It's difficult to say what the president was talking about. You could be referring to Iran, Syria, even Venezuela is a country where this administration has talked about the option of military force. So not clear at all. We'll try to pin the White House down a little bit more on what the president was talking about there last night. But that sets the stage for today in Washington, guys.
Next to the White House tonight, President Trump raising new questions this evening after what he said during a photo op, summoning reporters, telling them this was the calm before the storm. ABC Cecilia Vega asking the White House today, what did he mean?
In the White House state dining room, this is the image President Trump summoned reporters to see. The president smiling, surrounded by his top military leaders and their spouses. Then came the unsolicited, cryptic comment.
You guys know what this represents?
Well,
maybe it's the calm before the storm.
What's the storm?
Could be the calm before the storm.
What storm, Mr. President?
We have the world's great military people in this room. I will tell you that. And we're not waiting. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
What storm, Mr. President?
You'll find out.
And today in the Oval Office, we tried again.
Mr. President, what did you mean by calm before the storm yesterday? What did you mean by that?
Thank you very much.
After a wink and a pause.
You'll find out.
The comment especially ominous as the United States is engaged in a war of words with North Korea and the president is on the verge of decertifying the nuclear deal with Iran.
Was he referring to military action when he said calm before the storm?
We're never going to say in advance what the president's going to do.
How seriously should the American public or American adversaries, for that matter, take these comments?
I think you can take the president protecting the American people always extremely serious, and if he feels that action is necessary, he'll take it.
Okay, so there you go, folks. Those were the two news reports dealing with the president's very cryptic statement about the calm before the storm. And of course, as you heard, some of the questions that were thrown out as to whether or not this had to do with North Korea, whether or not it had something to do with Iran and the president deciding to pull out of the JCPOA, you know, that's the agreement that was arranged at with Obama, whereby the Iranians would have their assets that had been freezed for many years released back to them. And I think that they completely missed the mark, folks, completely missed the mark. Just a little bit of historical background. This, when he said this calm before the storm, this was before this big storm had hit in the south, down in Texas, that came to be called Hurricane Harvey, they named it. And then you'll remember that the president, he went down to Texas and he met with the governor down there. And he, you know, they had a sound clip of him saying, you know, Harvey, it sounds like such an innocent name, but it's not innocent at all. And then it was just a few weeks after that, folks, when we had the breaking news involving Harvey Weinstein, the Hollywood producer who had been accused of all sorts of sexual impropriety. Surprise, surprise. Even discussions about how this was a foreign intelligence operation on the part of Israel's Mossad, that Harvey Weinstein, that he had acted as a facilitator, much in the same way that Jeffrey Epstein did, in creating blackmailable, compromising material on powerful people, whether it was in the media or whether it was in government. And at the time when this came out, those of you who listen to this program will remember that we were the lone voice putting these two things together. The president's statement about Harvey being an innocent-sounding name, talking about, the hurricane that hit Texas. And then what was to happen just a short time after that with Harvey Weinstein. Well, folks, now I think it's safe for us to assume that the president, when he talked about, the calm before the storm, that it was a multi-leveled, multi-tiered, multifaceted, and multi-dimensional message, because he was standing there with his military people in this this story here, and he was talking about the calm before the storm, and they pressed him, these idiot reporters with the Jewish mainstream media pressed him and said, well, what does that mean? And he said, you'll find out. And then, of course, his then press secretary, Huckabee, the daughter of, what's his name, the guy with the looks like Gomer Pyle, anyway, Mike Huckabee. when asked, she was noncommittal, but at the same time, she made it clear that the president is going to do whatever has to be done in order to protect the American people. Now, this is very important, folks, because, the Constitution is very clear on this. All enemies, foreign and domestic. Okay. And the president understands that what the country has been put through, and especially what the country has been put through for the last 4 years, that this is a clear and present danger to the survivability of our nation. And it is for that reason that I think that he plans, as I said, he plans something rather large. And I posted a story on the website just, I think, yesterday, the day before, and it was entitled, once again, folks, I apologize for not being as professional as I should be. It is entitled DC, Titus, and the New Jerusalem. And in this, I take a few pieces of information. The first of which is that there are 25,000 troops, National Guard troops, stationed in D.C. And interestingly enough, folks, as well, about 5,000 federal agents and police officers, especially U.S. Marshals. Now, the U.S. Marshals, of course, one of the things that they do is they catch people who are fugitives from justice. Now, we will recall that over the last 4 years, certain of the law enforcement agencies operating at the federal level have demonstrated a certain degree of unreliability. Of course, we know all about the FBI and its role in spying on the president's campaign back in 2016. And so, but the marshals, generally speaking, folks, they don't get involved in political stuff. They're just cops. They're federal cops, and their job is to arrest bad guys. Well, I saw a story yesterday where 4,000 police officers across the country have been deputized by the U.S. Marshals Service. Now, this is very interesting, folks, very interesting, because like I said, the U.S. Marshals, they don't deal with matters related to national intelligence. They don't, like the FBI. I mean, they are involved in counter-espionage and other, they're part of the intelligence apparatus of the United States government. The marshals, as far as I know, they are very non-political. Their job is just to hunt down and arrest bad guys. And, of course, they're very good at putting together the profiles that are necessary in order to find out where they are and where they're hiding, okay? I always thought that if I ever, you know, when I was a little boy, I always had dreams of being, a federal agent. It was either going to be Secret Service because I liked their badge and the fact that they protected the president because, you know, George Washington was my hero at the time when I was a little boy. And the U.S. Marshals, I always liked what they did as well. Anyway, it's interesting. It's not just 25,000 National Guard troops. It's also about 6,000 officers, police officers, law enforcement officers, at least 4,000 of which are police officers from across the country who have been deputized by the U.S. Marshals Service. Okay, so, you know, I mean, there is a difference between what Army troops do and what police officers do. And as I won't say that we theorized it or even postulated it on the last program, the question that we asked is whether or not, in fact, they are National Guard troops or whether they are part of the U.S. Space Force, which is this new branch of the military that President Trump created just about a year and a half ago, something like that. Or at least if it's not the rank and file troops on the ground, if they're not U.S. Space Force troops, whether or not their commanding officers are. And so at this point, folks, the question that we are asking is this big thing that the president may be planning, is it in fact what we have discussed on this program now for over a month, which is his plans for arresting half of Congress? Now, I'm going to, point to a few things that indicate that indeed this may very well be possible. Number one, if you go to that story that I posted entitled D.C. Titus and the New Jerusalem, you will see the pictures there of the 7-foot-tall steel walls that have been built, ostensibly for the purpose of protecting everybody within that giant cage from troublemakers coming in from the outside. Okay, but folks, what it looks like to me is a giant jail cell. Once they get through, they ain't getting out. Okay, so if the president's plan was to get everybody, all of these criminals from the deep state. And remember, folks, I don't remember how many months ago it was, but the president tweeted that Pelosi and Schiff and Nadler and all of those who colluded with them in the first impeachment against him, that they were guilty of treason. And he said in that same tweet, he said, "I choose my words very carefully." Now, of course, this is one of the things that that just underscores, you know, the general incapacitation on the part of, the American people and especially the media in understanding what the president is saying here. Number one, he's not being theatrical or dramatic in his use of the word treason. He chose that word very carefully. It's the only crime that is listed as such in the U.S. Constitution, and it is described, legally speaking, as giving aid and comfort to the enemies of the United States. That's number one. When he says that all of those who colluded with them, okay, and he even went further in that tweet, he said, "Not everybody who has been against me has been guilty of treason." But he did specifically list Pelosi, Schiff, and Nadler, and all of those who colluded with them. Now, everybody's going to think, of course, that this means merely Congress who voted to impeach him. But it's actually much bigger than that, folks, because the media that has played a central role in all of this, the Jewish mainstream media, in pushing forth a false narrative that has led to the deliberate misleading of the American public concerning, you know, all of the business surrounding the Russia investigation in Ukraine and the impeachment and all of the rest of this stuff. You know, the media has been involved in this as well, okay? They have been hiding behind a weaponized First Amendment that says, you know, that they have the right to free speech. But they don't have the right to engage in treason, which is giving aid and comfort to the enemies of the United States, which clearly they have been doing. So, you know, in building this big cage, who's going to be there, folks? Who's going to be there? All of those people who consider the events of that day coming up to be their victory dance, okay? 5 years of their efforts paying off, meaning the members of Congress who have operated against the president, members of the judiciary, you know, the various federal courts who have been corrupted, the judges who have followed their orders and ruled against the president on this case and this case and this case, various military leaders who are creatures of the deep state and who have worked against the president. Members of the CIA and the FBI and these other, they're all going to be there for this party, folks. And they're all walled in behind giant steel walls. Okay. So, what is the president planning to do? Is he planning to wait until Biden, you know, takes his oath of office and then the crime is complete? It's a stolen election at that point. Okay, it becomes a stolen election. And then is it going to be at that point that we will see these various marshals coming in and making arrests? Will it be afterwards? We don't know. What we do know for sure, folks, very interesting to find out, is that the president will not be there at the inauguration. The first president who didn't attend the inauguration of his successor was, folks, Andrew Johnson, the first president to be impeached. And his impeachment was a political hoax. It was a hatchet job that was done against him, much in the same way that it was done against Donald Trump. And those of you who don't know the history of it, I will briefly go over it for you. Johnson was Lincoln's vice president. He was a Democrat from Tennessee. The way that the election of presidents and vice presidents went at that time is that the president was the one who received the most votes from the Electoral College, and the one who received the second most votes became vice president, irrespective of whichever party. Okay, and then they changed the process later to where they ran on one ticket. Okay, so when you voted for one, you got both. Anyway, what happened is that after the war, after the war between the states, President Lincoln wanted to heal the nation. He didn't want to go forward with this punishing process of Reconstruction in the way that the Republicans in Congress wanted him to. And they were known at that time, folks, as the Radical Republicans. That's what they were called, because they were the equivalent of today's neoconservatives, folks. Neoconservatives who have involved in America in these endless wars, which the president has promised to bring an end to. And for them, it was the vindictiveness against the South that really marked who they were and what they were about. They wanted a South that wasn't just defeated, but had been crushed and was without, well, basically just the same M.O., folks, that the neoconservatives have utilized in the destruction of Iraq, the destruction of Libya, total destruction. So it's not enough that it's a defeated army and a government that is suing for peace. They want it just obliterated, and this is what these radical Republicans wanted in the South. Okay, so that the Southern states, or any state for that matter, would never rise up again and challenge the superiority of the federal government. Lincoln was opposed to this, and his approach to the whole thing was to try and heal the nation. And the radical Republicans didn't like this. Of course, all of this was brought to an end with an assassin's bullet when Lincoln was shot in the head at Ford's Theater, I believe it was called. And then Andrew Johnson took over as president. And when he took over, he basically followed with Lincoln's policy of trying to heal the nation and to not just completely run the Southern states through this political meat grinder. And he ran into a lot of problems in Congress for doing that. The fact that he would not go along with many laws, because you have to remember, folks, that at that time, the Southern states were not represented in Congress because of the secession. So they were basically able to pass veto-proof legislation that would basically force the president's hand to do what they wanted to do. Well, many of the laws that they passed, including one entitled Command of the Army Act, okay, the Command of the Army Act was a blatant, flagrant violation of the very clear lettering of the Constitution with regards to the president's legal rights and responsibilities as commander-in-chief. And the way this legislation was written, the president would have to get approval first for whatever decisions he made with regards to the military. He would have to get approval first from whoever the top general was, okay, which is not constitutional. So the long and the short of it is that Johnson was brought up on impeachment charges, and it was just a hoax. It was a hatchet job. You know, they accused him of violating the command of the army. If I'm remembering it correctly, folks, it's been about 20 years since I've read about that. And other things, too. They accused him of bringing disrepute upon the U.S. Congress. Well, Johnson was acquitted by one vote. But nevertheless, it has gone down in American history as, of course, being a politically motivated hatchet job against him. And he didn't attend the inauguration of his successor. Okay. Likewise with President Trump. The news is that he's not going to be at the inauguration, but rather is going to be at Andrews Joint Air Force Base. Now, folks, the U.S. Space Force, you know, if we want to broaden our understanding of the possibilities that exist in front of us, the U.S. Space Force is a branch of the Air Force, okay? President is going to Andrews Air Force Base, okay? And where also, not so coincidentally, folks, is Air Force One, which he is going to be flying on, if I have read the news correctly, on his way down to Florida. Now, Air Force One, folks, Air Force One, right up until the moment that Joe Biden, actually up until 12 o'clock, 12 noon, when the president's term officially ends, meaning President Trump, he's still commander-in-chief. And while he's on Air Force One, he still has the power as commander-in-chief to order those troops and to order the federal marshals and all of the other agencies that are involved in providing, quote-unquote, security for the event to do whatever he tells them to do, which could very well include mass arrests of all of these people who have engaged in treason against the United States. So there are all sorts of question marks, all sorts of variables that are associated with this, folks. Am I willing to commit myself to saying for sure this is what he is planning? Well, I don't know. I tend to think that this is what he has got in mind. When he stood there two or three years ago with all of his military men, and he said, this is the calm before the storm, and he refused to elaborate on what that meant. He just said, you'll find out. Well, we really haven't found out yet, folks, have we? And we know Donald Trump is a man of his word. If he says something is going to happen, then it's going to happen. This is one of the things that has marked his presidency. He has made sure that everything he said would happen did. Okay. Now, let's just look at a couple of other things that have happened since the last time that we were together. President Trump has declassified an entire trove of documents related to the illegal spying campaign and the dirty tricks that were brought against him when he was a candidate. He just released these things, and the Jewish mainstream media in America has been dead silent about it. All they've been talking about has been, how Biden is promising to do COVID relief stimulus checks immediately, as soon as he takes office. They want everybody focused on that and not on the contents of these documents that have just been declassified. Let's see, what else? President Trump made a statement. Let's see, today is the 18th, so 4 days ago, made a statement, very important statement. He said, hold on, folks, I'm sorry, I should have pulled this up ahead of time. He said he was listing his accomplishments in drawing down troops in the Middle East, and he said in the middle of this, I will always be committed to stopping the endless wars. Now, again, folks, you have to read between the lines of what the president is saying. I will always be committed to stopping the endless wars. How is he going to stop the endless wars if he is not president of the United States? Now, I guess we could get picky about it and say, well, he's not saying that he's going to succeed in stopping the endless wars. He said he's always going to be committed to stopping the endless wars. But again, I think that the important, the significance of that statement, folks, right there, that statement right there explains all of the turmoil of the last 5 years with regards to Donald Trump. Israel, the person of Benjamin Netanyahu, Mossad, all of these people who worked so hard to get America, you know, embroiled in these endless wars with 9/11, okay? They are watching as all of their very carefully made and very dangerous plans that were put into motion with the terrorists, the Israeli-engineered terrorist attacks on 9/11, they're watching as that is about to go up in smoke because of one person, because of Donald Trump, okay? That's the whole thing, folks. It's not been about immigration. It's not been about Trump being a sexist and a misogynist. It's not about racism. It's not about Black Lives Matter. It's not about Russian collusion. It's those are all that's all background scenery. Okay, the main theme, the main animus against him has been on the part of organized Jewish interests who understand the deadly nature of what he has planned for them by building a wall around them, just like there's a wall sitting there around the area where all of these people are going to be on Inauguration Day. That's what it boils down to. I will always be committed to stopping the endless wars. Now, one of the things, too, to make note of is Trump's statement about a month ago where he said, they're not taking this White House. We're going to fight like hell to keep it. Now, everybody, of course, reading just on a one-dimensional level, will interpret that to mean that the Trump's legal challenges, you know, that basically have all been refuted and refused and all of the rest of that. Okay, but that's not necessarily it, folks. That's not necessarily it. They're not taking this White House. We're going to fight like hell to keep it. Again, when President Trump makes a promise, makes a statement, makes an assurance, he makes sure that it gets done. And at this point, I have no doubt but that his statement in that regard, that planning behind that statement we're watching take place right now with Washington, D.C. basically being turned into a giant prison cell. Something else to keep in mind, folks, which I mentioned on in this particular article, okay? And again, I'm not going to say that this is exactly what is driving the president's plans in this regard, but this is basically how, going back in history, how the war between Rome and Judea took place. It began as a three-year engagement where the Romans were chasing these rebels from town to town, village to village. The rebels all hold themselves up in Jerusalem behind its big walls. And at that time, the Romans, being led first by Vespasian, who would later become emperor, and then by his son Titus, they figured that they would wait the rebels out, that they would just lay siege so that nobody could leave. And Titus even told them, he said, if you just lay down your arms, okay, the whole thing will be over. We'll spare your city, everything. Well, the rebels wouldn't have anything to do with that. They were going for broke. And again, I'm telling you this, folks, because it's been the recurring conversation that I've been having at home here with the wife and the children who, you know, they want to know what I think about all of this. And you know, why would these people who were maneuvering against the president, why do they not see the likely trap that is being built for them? And I, of course, go back to the history of what happened between Rome and Judea. You know, nobody messed with the Roman Empire, okay? You just don't do that and expect to come out of it in one piece. These Jewish rebels did. These Jewish rebels who today, folks, they represent the same ideology, the same operating ideology that has been running the Jewish state ever since it has been dug up from its grave and had this diabolical life breathed back into it, the same ideology. So, you know, as they were fighting the Romans, this just to give you an example of how poorly they calculated their strategy. Okay, their first major mistake was in thinking that they were going to win. Okay, but again, you have to remember the perverse ideology that drives them. Okay, they believe that this is what their God wants them to do and that this God is going to favor them with victory. Okay, so go ahead. It's the whole David and Goliath mindset. Okay, here's this little scrawny little thing. David goes up against this giant, name is Goliath, and with one stone and the help of Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, he's able to defeat Goliath. Okay, the same mentality. You know, we can't lose. God is with us. So to show, you know, just how detached from reality they were then, in better understanding how detached from reality they are today, okay, not only did they make the fatal error of thinking that they were going to win in a war against the Roman Empire, but once these rebels escaped to Jerusalem, And they tried to enlist the help of the rest of the population of the city into joining them in their fight against the Romans, which the rest of the population of the city did not want to do. What did they do? What did the zealots and the Sicarii do in order to force the people to join in with them? They burned all of the food stores that they hid, as much as 3 years' worth of food, with which they could have waited out this siege, okay? But these rebels, you know, fully at the end of their, you know, how we were talking about a couple of programs ago, the Stephen King story, Cujo, and about this dog that gets bit at the beginning of the movie by a rabid bat, and how throughout the movie you can see how the disease is progressing, you know, so that by the time that the end of the movie rolls around, he's in the latter stages of his infection and has just turned into this monster that was not the dog that he was at the beginning of the program. Okay, so it's the same thing with regards to the zealots and the Sicarii back during the time of the Jewish-Roman wars. Okay, they burned all their food stores, thinking that this was going to force the rest of the population of Jerusalem into helping them fight. Because without food, and the Romans weren't letting them out, okay? And those who did try to get out, you know, tried to negotiate, look, we don't want to fight, please. The zealots and the Sicarii would kill them. So, and so I bring this up to underscore that we don't necessarily have to understand why these people today believe that they have a chance, that they stand a snowball's chance in hell of getting through this, and how they don't see the trap that may be waiting for them. And in this regard, if indeed this is the case, the president has played his part brilliantly. You know, he hasn't been seen ever since the riots at the Capitol. Hasn't really done anything. He's hanging his head low like a defeated man. And so he's sending all of the right signals to his enemies that he fully intends to just leave and let the best man has won, meaning Biden. So all of these things, you know, when we plug these things into the calculus of strategy, it's easier to understand then why these people might not see the trap that is waiting for them. Also interesting over the weekend was a story that appeared where Mike Lindell, he's the CEO of this company that's been very supportive of the president, MyPillow, and he had a meeting with the president. And as he was leaving the meeting, he was holding papers in his hands. And, you know, reporters always, you know, being the nosy busybodies that they are, they zoomed in on these papers, and they were able to make out some of the writing that was on those papers. And some of that writing said things such as martial law and the Insurrection Act and all of the rest of this. Okay. Well, Mike Lindell was asked about this, you know, what's this stuff that's on these papers? And he said, oh, yeah, these were things that I brought from a friend of mine to give to the president. But the thing is, folks, is that the question that we have to pursue in this regard is, what was on those papers, if it was something that the president didn't want, these report, the president knows. He knows what kind of telephoto lenses that these cameramen working for, you know, his enemies in the media. He knows that they can zoom on anything and see what it is. And so Lindell holding these papers in such a way that afforded these nosy busybodies in the press to see what was written on it. This was deliberate. This was deliberate. Otherwise, the president would have said, here, let's put these papers in a manila envelope. Okay. No, Lindell held them open in such a way that the press was able to get, was able to make out what was written on those papers. And this was Trump's way, President Trump's way, of sending a final offer to those who likely are going to find themselves being hauled off in handcuffs and leg irons here in just a couple of days. Similar to what Titus did when he sent two of his emissaries over the walls into Jerusalem to tell these insane feral zealots and Sicarii, look, this is your last chance. Okay, this is your last chance. Give it up. Or else, you know, what's going to fall upon you is going to be a storm from which there will be no survival. And of course, the Jews, being the mentally deranged people that they are, they chopped the heads off, if I remember the history of it accurately, they chopped the heads off of Titus's two emissaries and threw them over the walls. At which point, the Syrian soldiers who were under Titus's command, because the mercenaries that or the soldiers that were there, the Roman soldiers, they weren't Roman troops. They were conscripts and mercenaries from Syria. And when they saw what happened before Titus had even given the command to attack, the Syrians, who absolutely hated the Jews because of what the Jews had done to their women. If you read the historical account of this by Josephus, he said that the Syrian men hated the Jews because the Jews had infected their women with Judaism. And, you know, we can figure out what that means today, folks, when we look at the effect that the Jews and their Judaism have had over the women of we'll just take one country in particular, the United States, and to see what has happened to them as a result of it. So before Titus had even given the command, the Syrian conscripts and mercenaries were already there, breaching the walls, and Titus couldn't recall them, couldn't bring them back. So I believe that that is what that paper on the part of Lindell, I think that this was the president's way of giving them one last opportunity to surrender before he pushes the button, pulls the trigger, whatever. And I think that that is what is coming, folks. I think that's what's coming. The president said that he's not going to allow these people to take the White House. He said that they're going to fight like hell. And another statement that he made, again, I apologize, should have had this up already. Yes, so the president's statement. Even though I totally disagree with the outcome of the election and the facts bear me out in this regard, nevertheless, there will be an orderly transition on January the 20th. I have always said that we would continue our fight to ensure that only legal votes are counted. And while this represents the end of the greatest first term in presidential history, it's only the beginning of our fight to make America great again. All right, now, folks, I'm going to read it again. Donald J. Trump, President of the United States, says, even though I totally disagree with the outcome of the election and the facts bear me out in this regard, nevertheless, there will be an orderly transition on January the 20th. I have always said that we would continue our fight to ensure that only legal votes are counted. And while this represents the end of the greatest first term in presidential history, it's only the beginning of our fight to make America great again. So, folks, what he is saying here is that he's going to be there for the second term. It's only the beginning. And therefore, it's not difficult for us to do the math and figuring out exactly how he plans to do it. He's just built a giant cage, very similar in many regards, folks, to those walls surrounding Jerusalem, that basically kept the zealots and the Sicarii and these insane Judaic rebels trapped so that they were just easy pickings. And this is, I think, exactly what the president has in mind. Now, what is to come of this? Well, I would anticipate that it's going to be very disruptive, just like we have talked about on this program, folks. It's going to be very disruptive, and there's no telling what may come out of it, okay? He just placed Israel, he just moved Israel from being attached to EUCOM, that's EUCOM, that's the European Command, to CENTCOM, which is Central Command. Israel, ever since the beginning of her existence, has been considered part of the European theater of military operations. And the reason that it was given for that is because other nations, mainly the Arab nations and, of course, Iran, given the fact that, that they were so inimical towards Israel, that it would be difficult, if not impossible, for the United States to engage in any military activity where Israel may be involved when it has alliances with other countries like Saudi Arabia and Jordan and Egypt, or at least, if not alliances, cooperative relationships with them. Well, just the other day, folks, the president ordered Israel placed in CENTCOM. Now, of course, all of the one-dimensional types are saying, oh, he's done this because he's going to help Israel attack Iran in the last hours of his presidency. I don't think that's it at all, folks, because President Trump has made it his priority to avoid all wars, all endless wars. So him moving, I think, and as we have said here from the beginning of us going back to doing the program, I think that the entire coronavirus thing was something that was done between Israel and China working together, or at least Israel developing the virus and then releasing it from China, whether China knew about it or not, or had help from certain high-level and highly placed individuals in China who have an axe to grind against Trump because of his trade policies towards that country. And I think besides using this as an election year political weapon in order to have him removed, I think that they also plan to utilize the upcoming period of instability to launch military operations in their part of the world. China considers the Far East to be Greater China, and countries such as Taiwan and others who are within the American sphere of influence, China wants them absorbed within Greater China in the same way that Israel plans to absorb all of those countries between the Nile and the Euphrates into Greater Israel. And I think that President Trump moving Israel to CENTCOM is part of that. We know that he has been moving very important assets into that part of the world, heavy bombers, and he told the aircraft carrier to turn around, after it was headed back. And I think what it is that he understands what the Jews are planning to do, that they're going to use this upcoming period of instability to launch wars in the Middle East, and he is intent upon preventing that. So, okay, folks, I know we have been all over the map this morning, and we've covered a lot of ground, but I think we have probably sketched out a rough picture of what we're going to be looking at here in 50 hours. 50 hours. And I would encourage all of you out there to brace yourselves for what is likely to find its way at our front door. Now, is it possible that nothing is going to happen? Yes, it is possible. It is possible that President Trump, that this was a slow-lit fuse, a slow-burn fuse that was lit a long time ago, and maybe he has to wait a couple of days or a couple of weeks or maybe even a month. Who knows? Who knows? But the one thing that we know for sure, folks, is that he's not going to sit back and do nothing. Okay. And so with that in mind, I would just encourage all of you out there, all of you of goodwill, all of you out there listening to this to stay sharp, you know, because I think that our world is about to get rocked. And on that note, folks, let's see, we are here at 57 and a half minutes, and I know that when I add in the sound bite of the two sound bites, it's going to be longer than that, and I promise that I would try to keep this at just about an hour. And on that note, we're going to close out today. So we will, God willing, depending on circumstances as they arise, we will be back here on Wednesday. Or maybe, folks, we won't. We're just going to have to wait and see as things unfold. And in the event that we don't get together again, folks, for a long time, it's been great knowing at least most of you, those of you of goodwill, those of you who have taken your responsibilities in this regard seriously and not, you know, followed a lot of the flakes and kooks and pranks and crazies that unfortunately they play a very prominent role, a very active role in helping Judea pull the wool over so many people's eyes. You know, a lot of these people who have been avowed enemies of the president from the very beginning, accused him of being a pawn for Israel. He was going to start World War III because that's what Benjamin Netanyahu wanted him to do. And now, folks, they're all changing their tune after the election. They're saying, oh my gosh, you know, I guess the Jews don't like him anymore, you know, which in and of itself is as idiotic a statement as all of those that they made beforehand, since anybody who bothered to pay attention could see from the very beginning of this thing, 5 years ago when he was just candidate Trump, that the jury was against him 666%. Anyway, folks, hopefully we will be back on Wednesday or somewhere after that. If not, it's been great knowing you. My prayers and best wishes for all of you. Stay safe, stay sharp, and keep